Welcome to another episode of Living an Ultra Life. This is Mike, and this time we are going to talk about the Swami Shuffle Recap. Going to talk a little bit about this adventure. What an incredible adventure that happened. We started out on February 26th at 8 a.m., went to the blue magic carpet in Back Bay National Wildlife Refuge, and took the carpet, and then we hit the sand for 21 miles of bliss and joy and struggle bus, and you name it. It was incredible. As you guys know, Swami Shuffle 200 is more than 200 miles. It's 222 miles. I actually ended up with 225 miles this year, but that may be some wandering that we'll get into a little bit later here. But anyways, it's the whole reason for this race, and I'm going to point this out in the beginning, is to raise funds for veteran suicide awareness and prevention. And so that's why we run this race. 23 people started out on this wild, wild adventure, and they got to be really, really good friends because you share the struggle bus, you share the different things that are going on. So I'll kind of tell you about my race and throw some names in here as we start out. Horn goes off. We leave the Baja restaurant on Sand Fiddler Road in Sandbridge, Virginia Beach. And I, from the very beginning, had told everybody, look, I'm not going out fast. I went out fast. I went out with Kyle Vanek and Thomas DiStefano, who are two incredible warriors, and they're both about 20 years younger than me, or, well, maybe not. It seems like they're 20 years younger than me. They're much younger than me, and they were full of vigor, and they just were excited to get on the road, and we bebopped out at like 11, maybe 10 and a half, 11 minute miles. And I'm thinking, I'm going to die. And so, you know, for those of you who know me, I will find an excuse when I know I'm going too fast to slow down. So I said, I got to pee. And I pulled off and went behind a sand dune, and that gave them enough to just keep on going. Fortunately, those two guys kept it going. They did fantastic. Talk about that more later. But we hit the sand, and it was high tide, and so we were on the soft sand at the very top of the sand all the way to past the North Carolina border, which is 10 miles, and it just chews your ankles up. So you're just kind of going through this thing, and you're just pushing on as best you could. I maintained a walk, you know, 13, 14 minute walk, with occasionally I would burst in a little bit of running when I'd hit some hard sand. But mainly I just kept it steady and was just trying to stay, maintain for the 21 miles, the nutrition and hydration I knew that I needed, because I knew that once I hit the pavement, I had another 6 miles until I could hit the food line where I would get some nutrition and restock on all my fluids. So I didn't want to go too wild out of there, knowing that it was going to be 27, almost 28 miles before I got any type of relief. We got to the fence at the border. We had to time the waves so that we hit the waves going out. I was with Don Knott and Tyler Drapo at this point, and so we timed the waves just right. We even managed to get the gate shut. A couple people before us didn't manage to get the gate shut. I can totally understand why. When that water's coming in, you're thinking, I got 12 more miles before, you know, I'm going to hit pavement. I really don't want to have wet feet on the sand. But, yep, so we got off the sand pretty well, and things were going well. It was not a warm day. It was actually cold, but it was bright and sunshiny. And this may have played a kind of thing that happened later in the race where, you know, we're all looking at each other going, man, your face is red. I hope my face isn't as red as your face is, because we're looking at each other, and, yeah, our faces were all red. They were wind burnt and sunburnt, and it was crazy. So first aid, so I got off the sand. I quick found a little bench. I knocked all the sand out of my shoes. I got the sand off my socks. By this time, I was with Bob Morisi and I can't remember the other guy's name. Josh. And so I was with Bob Marizzi and Josh and kind of stuck with them for a little bit. Josh was feeling pretty good, so he took off running. He was actually running really, really fast miles. Tyler Drapeau took off and he went past me like a bat out of hell. He was looking really, really strong. And we were just having a good time. We knew that Aaron Isles and Michelle Gray were way out in front. Everybody was saying that it looked like it could be a race this year because Michelle was keeping up with Aaron, which was kind of weird because I remember when I ran it in 2023, Aaron Isles took off and nobody saw him for the rest of the race. Nobody was even close to him. But this year, 23 people made it off the sand and we just kept on moving. I stopped at Food Lion. The only hot food they had were these teriyaki chicken pieces thing, and they'd probably been there for a while. But I knew I needed to get something to eat, put some food down, so I put that down. It wasn't great, but it was food, which kind of became one of my key issues throughout the race. You're going to see some themes. So it wasn't great, but it was food, I think, was one of the themes that kept on going through the race. But so just kept on moving along and everything was going really, really well. Made it to about 40 miles in and my ankles started screaming at me. And so my original plan was to make it all the way down to the Comfort Inn at Jeanette's Pier, which would have put me at about 61 miles for the day, 61, 62 miles for the day. So a nice little 100K. But my ankles were really, really starting to just mess with me. And I had not found any place open to get more hot food. And I knew I needed more hot food if I was going to be able to make it down there. So as we're coming in, Karen Sanzo, who was a incredible saint, comes driving up and she's got some soup, which I mainly just drank all the broth. I apologize. I did not eat your cup of noodles, Karen. Thank you so much. I owe you big time. I'll pay you back at the Backyard Ultra. But she brought the soup. I got the off my feet for about 10 minutes in the back of her van, and it was a relief, but I also knew I'm not going to make it all the way to Jeanette's Pier. And so I booked a room at the Hilton Garden Inn, got to the Hilton Garden Inn, got off my feet and looked down at my ankles and was like, oh my goodness, I've got a lot of miles to do on these ankles and they look destroyed already. So I quick filled up the bathtub with some hot water and soaked my feet in hot water. Then I emptied it, filled it up with cold water, soaked my feet in the cold water, and did that two more times, just trying to get a little bit of relief on it. Spread Tiger Balm all over my feet and all over my ankles, just hoping to get some relief. And laid down, probably by this time, it's like 11 o'clock at night. There was nothing hot at the BP. So I had some popcorn and a Sprite for dinner, and I laid down to try and get a couple hours of sleep. My goal was to sleep until about 1, get up in 1 a.m. and get up and go. Never really got any good sleep. I would say maybe an hour or so of sleep, but I was laid down with my feet propped up, so that helped. Got into my shoes, got all my stuff together, had my pack all refilled and everything, and I set out at 1:30-ish in the morning and just kept on boogieing. And my goal was originally to make it to the house, take a quick, there's a house that got donated to the race for the duration of the race that we could all stay in an Airbnb in Salvo. And so my goal was to make it to that house and take a quick 2-hour nap and then get back up in the afternoon and head to the lighthouse and then hit the lighthouse, make the turn back, and then come back and get a better, like 4 or 5 hour sleep at the house on my way back. And so I kept on going through. I met up with Je Jessica Hardy, caught up to her. She was coming out of the 7-Eleven at Jeanette's Pier as I was going in to restock. She was looking really good. She moved off at a very fast pace then. I didn't see her for until after the turnaround. But yeah, that was pretty cool. and then made my way out to what we call Desolation Alley. Made that left turn, heading towards Hatteras, Oregon Inlet, about a mile and a half up on your left, and just kept on moving. Hit the Bastnaesite Bridge, and moved over the Bastnaesite Bridge actually really, really efficiently, and was feeling really good actually. And so I'm in Desolation Alley. I knew that there was some water stocked up by friends at the Pea Island Comfort Station. So just made it up and over the bridge, made it to the Pea Island Comfort Station. And man, the dear sweet volunteers there, who are a couple from New Hampshire, invited me in out of the weather. They're like, instead of sitting in the parking lot, just come inside. We'll fill up your waters and whatever you need done. They were so sweet. So I ended up spending, 45 minutes off my feet at the Pea Island Comfort Station talking to this wonderful couple. And yeah, I come out and I look over, and Joe DeAndrea, Peter Y, and Bob Morisi are laying on the ground with their feet propped up on Corey, Joe DeAndrea's girlfriend's car, just leaning there. And I said, guys, you can go to the comfort station. And so we chatted for a bit, chatted a little bit about strategy. And I told him, I said, my goal is to get to the house to, get all my stuff restocked, get it in my pack, get off my feet for about an hour, and then I was going to head back out. And so they did the same. They were like, okay, that sounds like a good plan. Maybe we'll meet up with you there. I told them I was going to stop at the Liberty gas station after in Rodanthe and get a grilled cheese sandwich. And so that was my goal. So throughout Desolation Alley, all I'm thinking about is a grilled cheese sandwich. I can't wait for a hot grilled cheese sandwich. Just it's going to taste so good. Like I was envisioning the feel, the texture of the grilled cheese sandwich on my tongue as it was going down. I get to Rodanthe, I get to the Liberty gas station. Peter and Joe had caught up with me. Joe was not doing really, really well at that point. He was kind of down to a limp shuffle, but we moved together pretty well and got to the Liberty gas station. They caught up with me right before Jug Handle Bridge. Got to the Liberty gas station. They hit the food truck. I was like, I'm going in and getting a grilled cheese sandwich. I walk in, I walk back to the grill. I was like, I'd like two grilled cheese sandwiches. They said, oh, our grill just got shut down. We can't do that. I was like, you can't cook two grilled cheese sandwiches. They were like, no. I was like, all right, fine. What do you have that's hot, that hasn't been here all day? So it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon right now. No, 1 o'clock. And it was 1:30 out in the afternoon because I knew I'd been on my feet for 12 hours at this time. And so it's 1:30 in the afternoon. And so I got this chicken sandwich and some French fries that, my goodness gracious, I don't know how long they'd been there. And so I put them in a bag and I'm like, okay, so it's 4 miles to the house and I'm just going to take it to the house, reheat it there, and I'll eat it when I get to the house and life will be just fine. Then I'll lay down, take a quick hour nap, and then get back up and life will be good because I'm figuring this will put me about 3, maybe 3:30 in the afternoon and out. So that's what I did. I got there, I heated up the sandwich, and once again, it was hot. It was sort of food, but it wasn't really food. And so I choked it down, had a nice Coke, and went to lay down for an hour, and my body was just acting weird and just like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it wasn't like deep cramps or anything like that. It was just like weird parts of my body would just all of a sudden just, freeze up and go crampy. So finally, after trying to do that for like an hour or so, I got up. It's, like 3:15 in the afternoon, and I get all my stuff all loaded and everything, get my backpack on my back. And as I'm starting to walk out of the house, my right hand cramped up. So my index finger and my thumb like cramped to the point where it felt like they were dislocating, and it was really, 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 really painful. And so finally that stops, and then all of a sudden it hits on my left hand, and I'm like, okay, this is really, really strange. By this time, Joe and Peter are awake, and they're watching my hands. They could see my hands just all of a sudden Now both of them just cramp, and it's they look like a claw, and my hands are just completely cramped. Well, now I've got waves of nausea hitting me and everything. They're like, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "I have no clue. This has never happened before. I have no idea what it is." But I managed to get my phone out, called my wife, and I was like, "Jenny, I have no idea what's going on." And she said, very wisely, "Have you taken any salt tabs?" I was like, "No." Now, keep in mind that I've been doing my scratch, which is my scratch superfuels, which is my hydration. It also has a nutrition. Each little single pouch pack is about 200 calories. So I started out with two of those packs in my 500 milliliter soft flask because it gives me a lot more food in me when I know I'm going long periods where I can't access an aid station or anything like that. And so I started out that way. When I got to the first food line, it was about three quarters of the way emptied. And so I dumped one of my pouches in there and then refilled it with water and shook it. At the BP station, about halfway down, it was about halfway full. And so at that point, I thought I was going all the way to Jeanette's Pier. So I put another pouch in and refilled it. And there was a theme going on. So every time I stopped, it was never like fully empty. And so I would just add a pouch to it and then add more water. And if you're smart, you realize that what I'm doing is I'm adding way too much electrolytes to my soft flask, and I am over electrolyting myself. I don't think that's a word. But this comes back to play because I'm sitting in this house in Salvo. Joe and Pete, they took off, and they're there. Dave comes in and he's looking at me going, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "I have no idea." He's like, "I'm going to bed." And so he went back and he took a nap. I kind of passed out in the chair. It was like I was just so weak. Everything was weak. I'm nauseous. I'm not feeling good. But I was just like, "I'm just going to sit here for a while." Well, a while ended up being 6:45. I woke up and I was like, "I got to get out of here. I got to get to the turnaround. I got to get back here." And now I know nothing's going to be open. So now I know by the time I hit Avon, all the hot food places are going to be closed. I know that by the high time I hit Buxton, all the hot food places are going to be closed. And I'm just like, I just got to stock up with as much junk food as I possibly can. So that's what I did. I had peanut butter packs. I had pistachios. I had some nuts. I had a food bar that they had on the table. That's all I could figure out is just take as much food as you can with you and keep on going. Get about a mile outside of Salvo, and all of a sudden the nausea hit me so bad that I was like, "Oh my, I need to find someplace off in the woods." And so there's not a whole, those of you who have gone from Salvo to Avon, there's not a whole lot. But I did manage to find a little group of trees just in time and dropped everything, and it came out both ends, and it was just debilitating. I am laying in the sandy, grassy, bleh, stuff, and man, everything that had been in my body, from Sunday morning to at this time, I don't even remember what it was. I guess it was Monday evening, came out, and I'm laying in the sand, and the only reason I'm telling you this, not to be gross or anything, but I'm saying this is the point where my race turned. I'm laying in the sand. I call my wife. I say, "Man, I don't think I'm going to make it." And she said, "Adam Morrell is on his way down. He's got soup. He's got crackers. Please don't make any decisions until he gets there." And so I was like, "Okay, I won't make any decisions till he gets here." And so I am just laying there, pants down around my ankles, looking up at the sky. It's like 7, maybe 7:30 at night, and I'm like, "Okay, I got 20 miles to the lighthouse. If I can make it to the lighthouse, I can pass out at the lighthouse and try and get some sleep until the morning, and maybe find some hot food." Because all I could think about was that I needed hot food. Well, I finally got up from that, got all cleaned off. Thank you, Ryan Prinzig, for butt napkins. They work like a charm. Got my body all cleaned up, got re-lubed, and set out on the road again. And I'm not moving fast. I'm telling you at this point, the miles were at best 18s at worst. Yeah, I never really got slower than a 25-minute mile, but I'm just sort of shuffling. And along come down the road comes Lisa Georges. Now, Lisa Georges is a phenomenal athlete that if you ever watch her, she doesn't run at all. So she has just got, if you think I've got a fast walk, Lisa Georges at this point was like the fourth or fifth runner. So she's in back, in back of Aaron and Michelle, but she's right up there with Thomas and I think ahead of Kyle and Tyler. And she's just bebopping along. Her son is aiding her, so she doesn't even have like a hydration pack on or anything. And she's just like her, she just has these short steps, and it's actually beautiful to watch, but she's moving fast. And so she stops, crosses the highway, she's talking with me, she asks what's going on, I tell her what's going on, she's like electrolyte imbalance. She's like, Mike, please do one thing for me from now on. Whenever you refill your hydration, make sure you empty the whole thing, then put a new pouch in. She said they're scientifically balanced. The serving size is scientifically balanced. You've imbalanced your body. She said you can recover, but you've imbalanced your body. So at this point, I'm like going, I'm gonna get to the lighthouse and call it. And so everything within me is telling me to quit. And here's where the race turned. So the race turned in the dirt because I called my wife and decided not to quit until Adam got there. But here's where the race turned. So now Lisa takes off and I'm going the other way. And so my brain is just totally thinking about quitting. And all of a sudden, I got really, really mad at myself. And I started yelling at myself out loud. And I'm saying, you are not a quitter. Nobody ever decided that you could quit. There is no quit in you. Don't even allow that thought room in your head. And you know what? Something snapped in my head where I was like, I don't care if it takes me the whole 6 days to get this. I have the option of not quitting because I've been given the strength that doesn't come from any other strength. And on my playlist, I had picked out three songs that I couldn't decide which was going to be the theme song of this journey. And so I pulled my phone out and I was like looking at them and I was like, Strong Tower, I need a Strong Tower. So Strong Tower by Cutlass. And I put Strong Tower by Cutlass on. And I'm telling you, I played it probably about six times in between phone calls from Adam and Karen Sanzo checking on me to see how I was doing. And I'm just playing Strong Tower and I'm sitting there going, you are my tower when I'm weak. You are the strong tower that I look to when I don't have any strength. And there's a point in ourselves, and I told somebody, I love when you get to that point where you know you can't do this on your own strength any longer. At this point, you know that there has to be something stronger than you to get you across to the finish line. And between Salvo and Avon is that point for me. It was before the 100-mile mark, but somewhere close to like 95 miles, that all of a sudden I said, I don't have the strength, but I do know the one that does. And I know that he can give me the strength that I will just stay plugged into him. And guys, I didn't feel any better. All right, here's the thing. You think, oh, God, okay, it's a miracle. He's going to make you feel any better. I did not feel any better. Adam caught up to me. He put soup in my body. I did not feel any better. I did not have more energy. I did not have more strength. But I knew that I could keep moving. And that's one of the things that just became my theme was, you know what? I can keep moving because somewhere out there on a in a big city someplace or in a small town is a veteran who's sitting on a sidewalk right now. And this is what I started picturing. I started picturing an American veteran sitting on a sidewalk, homeless, self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. Who's given up because he got discharged from the service. And here's the stupid thing that our government does. We discharge American service members every single day from the service. Some of them have gone to war, some of them have stayed here. But what happens when they get discharged and they haven't been retired? They're forgotten. They're nothing. They're nobody. The Veterans Administration could care less about them. It takes, and the only reason I know this is because I'm an American veteran who tried to get plugged into the VA system, and basically they looked at me and spit in my face because I didn't retire from the military. I only served 6 years. So because I only served 6 years, I'm a nothing, nobody, worthless piece of junk to them. And so, you know what? There's tons of men and women out there who are in the same boat that I was in. Fortunately, I had a belief system and a wife who believed in me and kept me moving along when my service that I served for 6 years told me I was worthless. I moved on. And I said, I'm not worthless because I know whose I am. Well, there's a lot of soldiers that don't know whose they are. And so the reason I run this race every year and the reason I beg you guys to donate to awarenessandaction.org is because they're reaching out to the ones that our armed services have forgotten and said, hey, you're not worth crap. And they are worth everything in the world. And I don't want to see another American veteran say, I'm not worth crap. My military doesn't think I'm worth crap. My government doesn't think I'm worth crap. And they commit suicide. So, you know what? I got pissed off between Salvo and Avon. And I said, I'm going to keep fighting for the men and women who don't know that they can keep fighting. And for the next 130 miles, that's what I did. And got to the lighthouse. Sorry about that little rant, but you just have to deal with rants. That's a true rant. It is not a false rant. So I got to the lighthouse. Adam, God bless you. You are so amazing. So Adam had to put up with me. Those who have run with me know that at about 2 a.m., I'm a brain dead human being. Adam got to experience it this time. So we're going up the road to the lighthouse, which seems to go on forever. And it seems like you're climbing the biggest hill in the world. And Adam's like, hey, when we get there, you can take a 2 hour nap in the car. You can just lay down, take a 2 hour nap. And I'm like, yeah, 10 hour nap. I can't wait for the 10 hour nap. And I must have said it like a million times, kajillion times. And God bless Adam. He just kept on, moving. Yeah, man, we'll get up there, 2 hour nap. It's all going to be okay. So we get up there. I get my little 2 hour nap, which didn't feel like I'd napped at all. And all of a sudden, next thing I know, Adam's opening up the tailgate. And I remember getting out. Now, Adam says that I just peed right there in the parking lot. I don't remember that. And then I don't remember what happened after that, but then next thing I remember is Adam squatting down next to me and I'm lying in the ground and I passed out in the parking lot and I'm thinking, oh, this is a great way to start the next leg. And so he gets me into the indoor toilets at the lighthouse and I sit on the pot and nothing's really happening because there's really nothing in my body that can happen. And so I'm just like, okay, gotta get up, gotta get going, gotta move. And Adam is just an amazing dude. He's like, okay, I'm gonna go find someplace open to get ginger ale. Well, it's 5:30 in the morning. There ain't no place open, man. I mean, there is literally no place open. And so he drives all the way to Avon, tries every shop, nothing's open. I finally just say, dude, you got to get to work. Just go to work. I'll be fine. He called and checked on me a bunch of times. I get to Avon right about 6 o'clock. The BP station's supposed to open at 6 o'clock. So I was going to get something there. Yeah, the BP station wasn't open. So I'm just like, okay, I got to keep going, got to keep moving. And so I get to the food line. Food line doesn't open till 7. I sat there and I was like, well, maybe I'll wait for the food line to open. But it was kind of cold and windy. And I was just like, I'm going to freeze to death if I wait here. So I get out back on the sidewalk and I still don't know if this is really real, but I believe a woman came out from someplace on my left, like a house, something. I'm not really sure what it was. And I said, hey, ma'am, is there any place that would be open at 6:30 in the morning in Avon that would have hot food? And she goes, oh, yeah, certainly the muffins and scones is open and they've got hot food and less than a mile up the road. And I was like, oh, God bless you. And so I set out for muffins and scones. I don't actually know if I saw a woman or if that was just in my head or what's going on. I'm not in great shape. Get to the muffins and scones. I walk in. I'm like, you people are the best people in the world, and I love every single one of you. And then I walk up and order my hot food, and I'm just sitting there going, oh God, you are so awesome. You got me to hot food. And the hot food, this is the first time that I had gotten hot food since Sunday morning. And that was edible and was just beautiful. I had a bagel sandwich. I was wise enough not to put bacon or sausage on it, and I put turkey on it. But the egg was nice and thick, and oh, the cheese was drippy, and the bagel was awesome, and it tasted so good. And the coffee probably tasted good too, because I drank 2 cups of it, and got to use the indoor toilet, and it was so awesome, and I was so happy. And I just set out, and I was like, okay, guys. I just got to keep moving. And so I had left a couple things at the Salvo house. So I get to the Salvo house. I quick throw everything into the pack. Pete comes out. He's like, hey, Joe's still at the lighthouse. He's got bad shin splints. It's going to take a while, but where are you trying to make it today? And I told him, I said, I'm going to make it to the Comfort Inn Jeanette's Pier. He's like, dude, that's like 30 more miles. I was like, that's where I'm making it to. I said, so I got to get boogieing. I said, love talking to you, but I got to get boogieing because Liberty Station, I'm going to grab, 2 grilled cheese sandwiches for the road and go. So I get to the Liberty Station, and I walk up to the grill, and I said, I would like 2 grilled cheese sandwiches. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Our grill cook just shut off the stove, and so we can't make you 2 grilled cheese sandwiches. I was like, great. I was not happy at this point, and there may have been some grouchy words that came out, but they did have some chicken nuggets. Yum, yum. It was hot. It may have been food, but I kind of doubt it. But so I choked down the grilled cheese sandwiches, and now I did something that I call the Jeff Jordan. So I was like, you know what? I need Coke in my soft bladder all the time. And so I started filling my soft bladder with Coke. And so my soft bladder on my left is with Coke. My right soft bladder is with my electrolyte mixed, where I dumped it out and refilled it with my electrolyte mix, refilled my water bladder, and off I go. And I am setting out and made it through everything. I just Karen Sanzo met me right after the Etheridge Bridge again. And she had texted me and said, what are you craving right now? And I was like, hot mashed potatoes. And somehow this gal, she's amazing, finds hot mashed potatoes, and she brings me 2 servings of hot mashed potatoes, and I scarf them down, take a quick, 20-minute nap, and then I'm off. And I'm just like, I'm making it up and over the Bass Knight Bridge. So they get to the top of the Bass Knight Bridge, and this was totally hilarious. You get to the top of the Bass Knight Bridge, you've climbed about a mile, up to the top, and I know I've done this so many times. You got another mile on the Bass Knight Bridge, and then you got a mile and a half down off the Bass Knight Bridge. I'm at the top of the Bass Knight Bridge, and all of a sudden, the wind has been blowing like crazy, just kind of weird, swirly. First, it's at your back, then it's at your face, then it's at your side, then it's at your other side, and all of a sudden, I start feeling some moisture with it, and I'm at the top of the bridge, exposed to everything, and somebody dumped a bucket of water on me and just kept on dumping buckets of water on me. But I'm a genius, and so I've got 2 rain ponchos in my pack, and I know exactly what pocket it is. So I quick unzip that pocket, get my rain poncho out. I got the silver one out, and I'm like, okay, got it all unfolded, and I'm still moving. So keep in mind, still moving, still just moving ahead, not a big deal. And I go to whip the, to pull the wind poncho over my head, and I realize I don't have a rain poncho. I have a Mylar blanket. And I'm like, well, it'll still serve the purpose, keep some of the water off of me. I'll just kind of whip it up over my head, and it'll, I'll just drape it around, drown me. At least it'll keep me kind of warm and maybe a little bit dry. So I do just that. I whip it up over my head. A big gust of wind comes out, and next thing I know, I got 2 corners of a Mylar blanket in my head, in my hands, and the rest of it is whipping on down the road, baby. And So I made it to the Oregon Inlet campground rest area, and it's like just sagged on the ground, just soaking wet, just thinking, well, I can't stay here long because it was not warm. And so I stayed in there for about 10, 15 minutes, took a quick nap and said, I just got to keep going. The Jeanette's Pier Comfort Inn is 8 miles from there. And I was like, well, I'm going to be getting there sometime around midnight. But, Karen had convinced me to make a reservation because she was going to drop off hot food and a clean shirt for me. And so what a blessing. So I did, and she did. And I got to the Comfort Inn about 11:30 at night on Tuesday night. And man, nice room, took a shower, soaked my feet again because the road does weird things to your feet, but I soaked my feet, everything was good. Laid down, thought, I'll figure out my strategy when I wake up and set my alarm for like 5 o'clock. Knew that they had a hot breakfast. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, I think I need to eat a hot breakfast. And so I texted Jenny and Adam and I said, hey, if any of you are available, I need to talk strategy, but I don't quite have a full brain because, I'm awake. I got like 4 hours of sleep, which is good. So I feel pretty, not great, but good. And Adam texts back. And so I call Adam and we basically talked out the strategy. We both agreed that because of the new rule at Back Bay, that if I left about 8 o'clock in the morning, that it should take me about 24 hours and I will hit the refuge somewhere around 6:30, 7 o'clock. And that way I won't violate the rules of Back Bay. And so off I went. Had a hot breakfast. We've tasted fantastic. Probably about 5 miles out from the hotel, I caught up to Richard Gleave. And Richard and I basically, Richard, I asked him what his strategy was. And he said, well, I don't want to stop at Hampton Inn. He's like, but I sort of do want to stop in Hampton Inn, but I don't want to risk the sand by myself tonight. Now, neither one of us had looked at the weather report at this point. But a lot of people were stopping at Hampton Inn, which is the last hotel. It ends up being about a 32-mile day for your last day. And I just told him, I said, look, man, I'm not sleeping well anyway. I said, so I'm just planning on plowing through. I said, I don't really care, what it takes, but I said, I'm gonna plow through. And he's like, all right, I'll go with you. So we stopped at Art's, both got us a nice hot sandwich, and off we went. And he's hobbled by his ankle. I actually had really good energy this last day and was in great spirits. Anytime I started to feel down, what song did it turn on? Strong Tower by Cutlass. Awesome, awesome. Every time I hear the song, it would make me smile and I'd just keep on moving. The other songs, there were like four songs that just every time I played them, they'd just really be it. So The Rubber Band Man by the Spinners would just kind of give me a little happiness. Just Visiting by Wookiefoot was awesome. I loved playing Just Visiting by Wookiefoot. Stomp by Kirk Franklin and Ooh Ah, My Life Be Like by Grits and Toby Mac was a big one. And then Big House by Audio Adrenaline. I played that a bunch of times and that really, really would get me moving and just, make me feel good. But Strong Tower was like the song of the day. So Strong Tower kept on playing that. Richard and I kept on moving up. We would take, breaks every, 5 to 6 miles just to kind of take a load off our feet, sit down, talk. We had great talks. I, couldn't really tell you right now what we talked about, but we talked about everything under the sun. Fantastic. And so we got to the Harris Teeter, and because I knew that they would have some hot, chicken there, and I needed to get batteries for my headlamp. And, yeah, we just did that. We checked the weather report. We said, okay, we're going to hit rain. But the store manager was Russian. So I spoke a little Russian with her and I had, picked out a chicken thing. And she looked down at it and she said, there's a newer one that was just made at 7:30. Let me go get that for you. So she takes mine, goes over, gets me the fresh chicken that had just been made right at 7:30. I wolfed it down like a big dog. It was totally awesome. It was the best chicken in the world. So it was way better than anything I had eaten along the way. So Well, except for that bagel sandwich. The bagel sandwich was probably number one on my hit list. The mashed potatoes were just fantastic. Karen Santos, awesome. And so we took down our food. We'd plug in all of our phones and just so we've got enough battery to get through the beach. And we laid down and actually took a good, 10, 15-minute nap. And then Olya came out and she said, "Hey, I need you guys to leave. I got to lock up." So we're getting up to go, and Richard goes, "Should we put our rain gear on now or later?" And I said, "Hold on." And I, went outside and I felt a gust of wind, and it had a lot of moisture. And I said, "No, we're putting them on now." So Richard got his really nice down jacket, waterproof with a down waterproof hood on it on, and I got out my fancy stuff. I got out my rain poncho and my rope. All right, got my rain poncho over me, tied the rope around my middle so that it wouldn't flap up in the air. And then for the next 12 hours, we heard flap, 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 flap. We hit the beach. It must have been right around midnight. We hit the beach, and we both knew we were in for it because we turned the corner onto the beach. The temperature dropped at least 20 degrees. It felt like the rain is coming down in buckets, and the wind is vicious. I mean, the wind is like nothing I've ever experienced. Now we're out on the beach with no shelter, and we just kept moving, just kept on moving, kept on moving. Rain kept coming. The wind is blowing like crazy. I mean, this is, I was telling somebody after, I was like, people don't drive in this stuff, and Richard and I are out on the beach on the ocean, fortunately at low tide, so we got some hard sand, but there's no protection from this, and we're out there just the two of us on our feet through this storm. I knew that there was a house that kind of sat out, and I couldn't remember the mileage marker, but I was like, if we can make it to that house, I know we can get under it because it has kind of a walled-in type of thing, and at least we can get out of the rain and out of the wind. We made it to that house. God is so good. Made it to the house, got under it, got some food in us, both, just sacked out, and I texted the race director, said, "Hey, we're just kind of getting taking a break out of the elements for a little while." We just laid out probably a good 30 minutes, but now we're both shivering. And I looked at Richard. I said, "We gotta move, man," because I said we're gonna freeze to death here. So, got us both of us out of there. Just kept on moving up the beach. About every, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles, we'd head up to the soft stuff, find somebody's steps that we could just sort of shelter on, take a short break from the wind howling. About 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m., the rain finally stopped and the wind decided to shift and now be in our face. So now we're facing another probably 12-ish, because I think at this point we're about 2 miles from the border. So we had about another 12 miles of being out in the sand with the wind blowing in our face. This was the point where I just said, "You know what? We've got to get a break from this." And so I took us up into Corova, up into the road, because I said, "Look, it's going to add a little bit of mileage, but I said we got to get out of this wind hitting us in the face because we're both shivering, we're both not moving well, but moving." And so I get us up onto Corova. We find this house that has this great underneath place, and we took a good 20-minute nap there. And then we got back out, hit the border, cross over into Virginia, and man, I was like, I have finished this race. I was so joyful. I mean, I was just filled with joy. Richard's still moving along and everything, but man, I just knew that, I had crossed that level of, I've just done something really, really significant. And I was excited because I was like, this is cool. Got to the Back Bay National Wildlife Refuge sign after seeing the park ranger pull out right at 6 a.m. from Barbour Hill and drive down and park at the sign until 6:11 a.m. So yeah, kept on moving, stopped at the sign, called Adam, had a great, conversation with Adam. Man, kudos to that dude, Adam Morrell. I love you. You're a strong brother, and you got me to the finish line. So thank you so much. But just had a great time. I just sat out there singing God's praise, singing, every song I could possibly be. Richard got up there. I said, "Look, man, I got you here." I said, "My wife's waiting for me." I said, "I'm going to go meet my wife." And he said, "Yeah, you know what? You deserve this." He said, "You're going to be the first screwed runner across." I was like, I thought Jessica Hardy was in front of us. She wasn't. She had wisely stopped at the hotel, smart gal, with Peter and Joe and Bob. And there were like a mass of people that were at the house. And so I kept on up the beach, and probably about half mile from where I needed to turn, I kept on seeing this black coat off in the distance. And I was like, my wife has a black coat like that. And I couldn't tell what this person had, but it was like a bag. And I was like, wow. And next thing I know, I look, and there in the distance is the smiling face of my forever girlfriend carrying hot coffee and blankets out to the beach to meet me. And I got to walk in from that point 2 miles, 2+ miles with my beautiful forever girlfriend, sipping coffee, talking about the journey, praising God together, laughing, crying, the whole mix of emotions. Crossed the line in 96 hours, 14 minutes, and knew that I had just done something really, really significant. So it was another incredible journey to Swami Shuffle 200. I know that's been a long podcast, and I apologize. But for those of you who made it to this point, I do this crazy thing for one reason. If we can raise enough money to get one more veteran off the streets and keep on living this life that's worth living, then you know what? It's all worth everything that I've got to put my body through. My body will repair itself, it will recover. But if we can get one more veteran the help that they need, then you know what? It's worth it all. So if you haven't gone to awareness and the letter N action.org, awarenessandaction.org, and donated, please go there and donate. Do it for a veteran. Do it for one of these people who doesn't feel that love and wants to end their life and wants to go into these dark places where they self-medicate with alcohol. And let's do it for them. Let's do it for their families so that we can watch people live a life to the full. That's it for this week's episode of Living an Ultra Life.